Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Chelsea Echo. Welcome to your preview of Chelsea versus Brighton in the Premier League this weekend. And it is a big game because it's a game which Brighton like to think is a derby because they think we're, you know, they're our feeder club or some weird stuff. And they tried to make it a thing and they've not made it a thing. They've only made it a thing with me because it's like your annoying little brother who constantly just pokes you. And that's how I feel about that. But we'll talk about that later in the show because we do also need to discuss West Ham and Barrow. And as usual, it is myself, it is Daniel Childs, and we are going to give you everything you need to know about the game coming up, as well as Tom, who will jump in with a little bit of stat shagging later in the show. But we'll get straight into it with me and Dan, and we're going to talk all things West Ham. Dan, you and I were both very, very wrong, weren't we?
Yeah, we were pleasantly surprised. The ease to which that game played out was very, very different to, I think, what most expected, really. Obviously, in the past week, it feels like it's starting to implode a bit for Lopetegui, and that kind of started with Chelsea. I think that it's a combination of, I know John McKenzie of Tifo labelled it the worst off-the-ball performance tactically he's seen in like 5 years. So, I mean, he's an objective tactical guy and someone that I respect. So, yeah, there were problems with the way West Ham was set up. But then it's always that thing of there are two teams to a football game and it is on Chelsea to exploit those gaps, and they did brilliantly. And obviously, Jackson was the star of the show. I think arguably his best and most complete Chelsea performance so far. Really showcasing his improvement, his finishing in front of goal, his all-round game. It is brilliant. And yeah, just I thought it was a lovely afternoon. I think I really did celebrate the Palmer goal, because at 2-0 you always are a little bit, if they get one back here, maybe it might become a little bit spicy and uncomfortable. The moment that third goal goes in, it was really well orchestrated. You knew it was game over. And to be fair, it could have been another wall situation. There was Felix had a couple of shots and Nkunku should have scored. So it could have ended up being 5 or 6 on the day, but lovely stuff, comfortable. And given Bournemouth and West Ham were two away games that looked pretty awkward on paper because they're two grounds Chelsea have historically struggled at, to get 6 points from that, an improvement on last year, is obviously great news.
Yeah, I thought the game itself was very much, like you said, you know, when Palmer scored, everyone kind of relaxed at that moment. Nicholas Jackson as well had a fantastic outing after you and I were struggling to figure out if it'd be him or Nkunku in the starting lineup, and I thought he really put his best foot forward. But yeah, what I want to touch on what you were saying about the worst off the ball performance that John McKenzie was mentioning. It was shockingly bad from West Ham. I thought we carved them open going through the middle, and it seems to be a pattern which has emerged, obviously, against Barrow as well. Now, I'm not saying that Barrow and West Ham are a similar level of opponent in the slightest. And I know West Ham probably didn't put their best foot forward that day, but Chelsea seemed to have a lot of joy going through the middle of the park. And I thought that, yeah, overall, the performance at West Ham was great. I don't think there was really anyone who really put a foot wrong. I thought everyone was doing everything they needed to do, and they got the job done. I think that's the best way to describe it. It was a case where Chelsea were thoroughly professional, and the opponents on the day were less so in terms of what they were putting out. In terms of what you're saying about Lopetegui, look, I know it's a Chelsea podcast, but I'm intrigued. Obviously, there's been talk of him, and there's talk of Steve Cooper, obviously, as well, being the managers that are under the pressure, most pressure in the Premier League right now. Do you look at that West Ham team and think Lopetegui will get given the time, or do you think that realistically he might be the first to have his head on the chopping block?
He absolutely could, because West Ham have obviously invested quite a bit and their expectation is no longer just surviving in the Premier League. They are expected to be, and have been for the last 3, 4, 5 years, I think at this point, around the top 10, usually around the top 7, 8. They've obviously had forays into Europe, which we spoke about last week. And I just think it's something we discussed, right, that it seems to me like West Ham, again, have maybe their fans are, you know, they wished for this kind of more expansive football. And I spoke a lot about how their identity as a really good counter-attacking team is part of why they've been such an effective Premier League team, why they've been a team that has punched above their weight at times. And sure, there is a an understanding that when you do change systems slightly, you have to appreciate that. But I think that Lopetegui has to take responsibility. I mean, I just, whatever your kind of large over, like, long-term plans for West Ham, just all round, if there was a way you play against Chelsea, this current Chelsea team, that was the worst way you do it. The idea that he moves to almost a back three where Alvarez is marking Jackson. Jackson's faster than Alvarez. So in a race, Jackson's always going to beat him. It meant they lost, I think, a little bit of weight in midfield, which is key against Chelsea, because obviously Cucurella moved into central midfield, which we'll get to with teams. I prefer Cucurella moving into central midfield more than I do the right back, whoever it is moving into central midfield, because I just think Cucurella is a more superior player in that. He just feels more comfortable, and I think Chelsea look more fluid when he's in central midfield. But then also, no Antonio. I was completely astonished that Antonio didn't start that game, and they basically started with almost no centre forward, like no recognised centre forward. It just baffled me. So, listen, if they keep losing, and we know how football works, we know how quickly that momentum can negatively impact you. But I wonder if somewhere right now David Moyes has a wry smile, because he's probably looking at it and going, yeah, you get what you wish for, basically.
That's exactly what I was thinking, because that was going to be my next question. Do you think West Ham have maybe jumped the gun a bit? Does it feel almost like they've done what they did with, what Stoke did almost, where there was a side there that was very robust, forays into Europe, as you said, you're seeing history repeat itself once with Tony, like Tony Pulis there. It was a very strong side. And then you started seeing the La Masia graduates and the more creative players and the sexy younger names coming in, Jordan, Shaqiri, Boyan, these players that weren't exactly befitting of the style that Stoke had, and West Ham, I'm getting them both confused over and over. You know what I mean? Basically, it was all falling apart there. And, eventually saw them fall down the pecking order. So I'll have to see what happens, though, with all of that. I don't think West Ham make the same mistakes as Stoke. I do think there's something there. I think Lopetegui will get it right. I think he's been a good enough coach. He's proven it in a lot of places.
They have good individual talent. Like, even in that game, Kudus, obviously, I think, is a very good player. Jared Bowen, I think, will probably get you 7 to 10 goals a season. I think Antonio is a very good centre-forward. They got power in central midfield with guys like Suchek. Yeah, I think in terms of, it's maybe just one of those natural, unless it goes really, really wrong, I think it is just one of those things where it's been quite a brutal week. Chelsea at home, they lose that. And you've got to look at their home games as well. They came up against Aston Villa, Man City and Chelsea in their first three home games. I mean, I know Chelsea aren't what they were 5 years ago, but in all three of those cases, if you were to sit there and go, well, West Ham, if both teams are at their best, they're going to lose all three of those games. But Aston Villa are better than West Ham, Man City are better than West Ham, Chelsea are better than West Ham, and they've just gone away to Anfield. So in terms of actual results of where West Ham probably should be, or maybe where they will be over the course of the season, Lopetegui is probably hoping it will even out and they'll start to get some more reasonable home games and it'll start to build momentum. And then probably we'll get to like March and they'll be like ninth and the panic will be over.
We'll see what happens. But enough talking about West Ham. No one cares about that anymore. It's gone. And this is a Chelsea podcast. I know we do it every week, but it's because me and Dan just like talking about football. It's our thing. We did Barclays in 2 weeks ago. We've now done West Ham here for a solid 5-6 minutes. Now we'll jump straight into the Barrow game. A 5-0 victory. Another thoroughly professional performance by Chelsea. Christopher Nkunku notching a hat-trick. But look, before we even talk about the game, I do have a bone to pick with you, Mr. Daniel Childs. I want to talk about Kieran Drewsby-Hall, because you and I seem to have very differing opinions on him. So I thought in that game, obviously, if you look at what happens with how Chelsea set up in that game, realistically, on paper, I say on paper, and I always say games aren't played on paper, because I always think about that Bradford game, which was my little brother's first ever Chelsea game, which was never, a fun day out, and it will never be a fun day out to remember. But it is a training fixture, per se, without sounding arrogant. But the quality that Chelsea fielded versus what Barrow had already out on the pitch, you would have thought a fairly simple job, right? So I spent a lot of time watching players that maybe I wouldn't have the opportunity to do so, right? And Kieran Drewsby-Hall is a player who caught my eye, because he was doing all of the things which you wouldn't notice. So for me, for example, that's my favourite sort of player. I love watching those sort of people who will just pick up the pieces wherever people aren't quite getting it right or quite doing the right things right. And he was, if you watch the game, he was, and I'm not saying you didn't, but that's not a personal attack. That's just me saying, if you watch the game, for me, when I saw him playing, he was filling all the spaces and sacrificing for the team where others would maybe be making more mistakes. So obviously he was playing in that double pivot, but you often saw him go forward if someone was dropping back. You know, he was covering a lot for Cesare Casade. You know, he was very much, I thought Casade was poor. That's just my opinion, and the numbers back it up as well. For people that like shagging the stats, as you would have heard if you listened to the final score show, Red Score and Rambles all went through that, and I thought he was very much somebody who did all the simple stuff very, very well. However, you and I didn't quite seem to see eye to eye on Kiernan Drewsby Hall. Do you want to elaborate on why you feel that way? Because I thought we could do it on Twitter, but I thought, you know what, nah. Let's save it for the pod, because end of the day, guys, we are content kings and we need to harness that content.
I don't actually disagree with anything you've just said. That my contention about Kiernan Drewsby Hall is not that he can't do a competent job against the League Two side in the Carabao Cup. That's not really the point. Is my point was that I just don't really see the reason Chelsea had to go and sign him. The role he plays, if this is the role he's going to play, is very mundane, very standard, very average. Like, you know, and I get back to sort of like squad building, in the sense that, especially when Chukwuemeka came on, and I was so happy to see Chukwuemeka finally get some minutes, and just to see the difference in level between what, and I guess context, right? Chelsea had already won the game, it's late on, but you know, Chukwuemeka comes on and is instantly looking to thread a nice pass through to Mark Giyu. He's an energetic player. I think he's got an eye that, and a technique that we actually lack, especially when teams sit quite deep against us. That's something we spoke about with Nkunku, of how important those players can be, because low blocks have been a big problem for Chelsea for a number of years. And to me, if Kiernan Drewsby Hall is going to take up the minutes that could have been there for Connie Chukwuemeka, to me, I just don't think it's a good use of your squad. You know, Kiernan Drewsby Hall was sold as someone that obviously knows Edson Maresca, was very key to his style of play. So far, he's been on the fringes, and rightly so, because the times I've seen him play, he's either been very forgettable, or in the case of the two Savet games, he was very poor. And that's a higher level of opponent. That's, for me, is a more important game to Chelsea. And he couldn't win a tackle against Savet in the first leg, and he was outrunning the second. I mean, and then that became a very awkward evening for Chelsea. So, and again, like, it's, people don't like this, but it's, I look at what we had in central midfield last year. I look at what we now have there in terms of squad depth. I'm very concerned about central midfield. And when I talk about central midfield, I mean like literally central midfield, like defensive midfield cover. We've spoke about that before. And I don't trust that Drewsby Hall, against a better level of opponent, is good enough to offer protection. Against Barrow, it doesn't really matter, because in the first, Chelsea scored a couple goals in the first 20 minutes. The game's done. You know, maybe Barrow are a team that are going to be chasing for the playoffs potentially, but they're probably going to be mid-table League Two. They're not. This is not, you know, a team that should have ever given Chelsea serious problems, especially the team that he put out. So for me, it's just a bit of like a shrug of the shoulders with Kiernan Drewsby Hall. It's not that I am going to sit here and tell you he can't do anything good in games against Noah and Barrow. He's going to like, you know, he can't do a competent job. It's just like, to me, it's just like a bit of like a, yeah, it's like a shrug. It's to me, those minutes should be Carney's minutes. Why can't we just develop him?
So with that, I completely understand, I completely agree to a certain extent. Do you not feel that Carney, Chukwuemeka and Kiernan Drewsby Hall are both very different players? Because when I look at Carney, I do look at someone who, in that Chelsea team, and when we have seen him play for Chelsea, he's been a box-crashing midfielder. He's been someone further up the pitch, someone who, you know, I guess I could, if we're going to liken it to anybody in the way that he plays, I see similarities between himself and maybe the Ruben Loftus-Cheek of that Sarri season, you know, a player who would drive the ball up the pitch, would be that person on the edge or coming into the box to pick up the pieces if the centre forward didn't quite make it. Whereas Kean and Drewsby Hall seems to be a player who sits a lot deeper. As much as he was that box crasher in the Championship, clearly, you know, Enzo Maresca feels that there are better options throughout the pitch in that number 10 position. You know, we've got Cole Palmer, you've got Nkunku, you've got maybe even Carney in that position, which means that Kean and Drewsby Hall is having to find another place in this team where he very much is going to be, for me, and look, at the price we paid for him, obviously I get what you're saying about how mundane he is, and I get what you're saying about Carney Trukmeka, but I do feel he's a sort of player that maybe, well, it's not replacing Conor Gallagher, because I don't think he's an upgrade, and he is a downgrade realistically on Conor Gallagher as well, but that's a whole political debate which you and I are on one side of the fence on, and we've had that discussion on numerous occasions.
For betterment Kean and Drewsby Hall, that comparison does not get brought up throughout the course of the season, because it doesn't, especially what's happened to him in his Chelsea career so far. He hasn't even come close to being a rival. He's not a first teamer. He's a fringe player. He's not even a reserve. Like, he's not even first off the bench. He is, we've got a midweek game, I need to rotate the squad. I'm very curious to see what the team's going to look like against Ghent, because to me, that's a more important game, and it's against a higher level of opponent. And in my kind of midfield, if like Lavia's back, I still wouldn't probably be starting him. So it's like, just on your point there about what he's brought in to do and the relation to Chukwuemeka, people were selling Drewsby Hall as this kind of technically proficient advanced midfielder, because that's what he was in Maresca's Leicester system. If he's now having to find a role deeper, then it just kind of counteracts the point of the signing, because then I think, well, could have maybe kept Andre Santos, who could play a deeper role. You could have obviously kept Leslie Ogechukwu, who's gone on loan to Southampton, who could play that deeper role and get those kind of pretty consistent minutes in what is a hectic schedule. So again, it all comes back to, if you're bringing in a guy, especially Drewsby Hall is not the Clear Lake young guy that is going to get better type thing. He is like in the prime of his career now. So he needs to be at 26, him moving to Chelsea. I assume he moved to Chelsea with the idea that he's going to be playing regular football, which at the moment looks kind of unlikely, or at least regular Premier League football. That looks unlikely at the moment. So, and he's not going to be, it doesn't look like to me, a level raiser based on what was there. So it's not like you make the argument, yeah, we lost his foot.
But that's not what I'm saying he's going to be.
No, but
that's not what I'm saying he's going to be.
Then,
for me,
then I get back to, what's the point of the signing? That's the contention. Mm. If the point of the site, like, why can't just an academy player do that role? If his role is just to sit there against weaker opposition and recycle possession and fill in gaps, as you say, do you need to spend 30 million to get that?
Well, no, for me, I feel that he's a sort of player who not only will he be that, but I do think in those high level games, but we'll see, won't we? You know, we've got the Europa Conference League, we've got other games come throughout the season. There's no doubt that Chelsea's going to pick up injuries, so we'll have to see where he fits. But he feels for me very much, like I said, I like those Milner-esque players. Those are my favourite kinds of players, and he feels like that. And yes, I agree with you, it's 30-odd million quid, which you go, great, it's money which has been spent, but realistically, maybe someone else could have done it. But behind the scenes, maybe he brings something to the team which people we don't know about. Maybe he is someone who's been helping put the system in place. Maybe he is someone who is just a good person to be around the dressing room, maybe to replace some good feeling that's gone with other people. That level raiser that, you know, we you and I knew Conor Gallagher was when training, he'd give 110%. But maybe 2 years ago when he was given 110%, we were going, well, he doesn't really get in the team. If the right offer comes in, we'd think about it, until obviously he fought his way into the team. Maybe Kean Drewsby Hall's that person who helps impart Enzo Maresca's system, but then also brings the level up in training, and then will be that player who you're 2-0 up in a game, you just need to hold on to the ball. Because I look at Leslie Ogechukwu, I don't think he is as technically proficient as Kean Drewsby Hall. I think he's more of a physical presence. I think what he is in that number six position. Andre Santos, I've not seen enough of to comment on. Obviously having a fantastic season in Ligue 1, but I feel like Kean Drewsby Hall is, you're 2-0 up, you bring him on, you knock the ball about. He's what Jorginho should have been for Chelsea, almost. That player who you just need to keep hold of the ball, keep recycling it. Because that's what he was doing really well in that game against Barrow. And obviously the reason I'm using, I know everyone's going to say, it's Barrow, what are you talking about? But like I said, it's basically a training session, so it gives them an opportunity to just understand their roles and how they play a bit better. And that's what I thought Kieran Drewsmill was doing. I thought he was, when someone was moving forward and occupying space when they should have been maybe further back, he'd be the one who's always checking his shoulders, always looking up for that space, drops in, holds on to it, gets the ball, simple passes, maintains the shape of midfield, commanding presence there because he was putting people in the right places. He was doing things which, again, I don't think a lot of people would notice regularly, but it's the sort of things that I really like to look out for. And I think that he's going to be that sort of player. Yes, £35 million for a player like that is nuts when you probably have someone who could have done it in Andre Santos, like you've mentioned. But let's be honest, how many rational decisions have these sporting directors made over the past 2 years, mate? It's just another one. So I think I've maybe just become a bit more naturalized to it in comparison to you, I guess is probably the best way of putting it.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a small point, really. And like, the bigger point of the evening was Nkunku scoring a load of really good goals.
Absolutely.
The range of finishes. João Félix, I thought, was going to have a better night. I thought he started the game very well, but faded as the game went on, unfortunately. Neto, obviously, scoring his first Chelsea goal was good to see. It's always nice when, you know, those games are for those kind of fringe players. And if we're looking this season at a B, maybe even a C team, dependent on the game, it's on those kind of players. I always think it's your responsibility. You've got to show and give some evidence that you deserve to be in the A team. And I think Nkunku obviously is that player. I don't think there's anyone else really in the game to me that I sort of sit there and go, yeah, you really made an argument that you should be in the team that just beat West Ham 3-0. Nkunku's the only one. And I think at the moment Nkunku is the most obvious one because he is a very good player. He's a very good finisher. So he's always going to come to the fore more than anyone else. I think he's probably the first sub off the bench, in my opinion. He should be the first sub off the bench if he's not starting. But we're through to the next round. And because of the squad depth...
Who do you want? Do you want Wimbledon or do you want... Newcastle.
Well, obviously Wimbledon away, I think, would be brilliant. I love the story of AFC Wimbledon.
If the pitch holds up.
Yeah, I mean, it's really it's sad, really, because that's a lovely new stadium they've got, and I hope for their sake they're able to. I know they've had a lot of support since that happened. It's dreadful. So hopefully that can be sorted in time. But obviously it's likely going to be Newcastle. And that'll be a tough game because Newcastle haven't got any form of European football. And I think that Eddie Howe would probably be in his mind to play a pretty strong team in that game. So it's going to be difficult. That's the nature of cup draws, right? Last year we were, and in both domestic cup competitions, we were a lot more fortunate in cup draws. I think in the fourth round we had Blackburn at home. We actually had Newcastle at home in the quarterfinals. So... it's likely going to be Newcastle. It likely will be a tough game, and I think someone tallied it up in terms of starting to put those games into our calendar and saying it does look like a pretty difficult run late October, November, December time. So that's when this kind of good form and momentum needs to be built, because you need to get to that more difficult run and be in a good place structurally to face those harsher challenges which are going to come for Chelsea. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, it'd be very exciting to see. I mean, either of those in the way that I'd be very happy with. So we'll have to see what happens with that. But we're not here to talk about those games now. You've had your little review. We've obviously talked about Nkunku, which is no doubt we're going to talk a bit more about later when we do pick the Chelsea Echo 11. But before we do get into anything else to do with this game against Brighton, you need to get the numbers behind it. So I'll hand you over to Tom. So hand you over to Tom for the one part of a show that's got a jingle. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Stat Shaggers.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
The stats are back, and this time they're positive. Chelsea against Brighton. Chelsea's winning run continues. 3 wins in a row, 9 goals scored, 0 away. It's good times at the moment to be Chelsea. Now they just need to translate that to home Premier League victories, and Brighton is a great place to start this weekend, and the record echoes that. Chelsea have played the Seagulls 23 times, they've won 15 of those, drawing 5 and losing only 3. Of course, the first game between the two sides back in 1933 in the FA Cup, they did lose Chelsea. But they didn't lose again until Graham Potter's Chelsea were humbled 4-1 by his old side at the Amex in October 2022, scoring two own goals in the process from Ruben Loftus-Cheek and, of course, another former Seagull, Mark Cucurella, who will be looking to put that right this weekend. The Blues then follow that up with a 2-1 loss at home in April 2023 with Brighton's current man of the moment, Danny Welbeck, and Julio Enciso scoring the goals for them. The last matches, though, have belonged to Chelsea, as really has this fixture, with Maurizio Pochettino managing to guide the Blues to three wins over the Seagulls last season. A 1-0 win in the FA Cup, in the League Cup in September, a 3-2 win in December 2023 when Enzo Fernandez scored a brace, and a 2-1 win at the Amex where we saw Christopher Nkunku's first balloon celebration in the colour blue. The manager record, as always with this fixture, Enzo Maresca has yet to play Brighton. But there is a bit of form now for him to follow in this game, of course, with Pochettino winning three last season. So he's got a bit of work to do there. Having got Chelsea onto the front foot with some outstanding away performances of late, it's now time, as I said, to translate that onto the home field of Stamford Bridge. Maresca will manage against Brighton for the first time this Saturday. But he has got two victories up his sleeve over the Seagulls under 21 side. His opponent for the day, Fabian Hertzler, won the Premier League's Manager of the Month award for August, and at 31 he looks to have a long and very successful career ahead of him. He, of course, having only just been in the Premier League, has also yet to manage against Chelsea. And you know, the Seagulls, they remain unbeaten at the moment under Hertzler, but he has never faced Chelsea before, so he's hoping that unbeaten record can end. And it's back to you in the studio.
The Chelsea Echo presents Stat Shaggers.
Daniel.
Numbers.
Oh, dear. We love Tom and his stats because he gets really invested. You should see, right? He's got a full-on spreadsheet he sent me a screenshot of, which has got everything laid out. And I'm like, this is incredible. Like, how can someone have this much motivation to look at numbers? I've never got it. That Twitter tactics either. I don't get it. You know, it's it depends on the person, but if it's someone who's just, you know, not got a clue what they're talking about and just uses big words, it kind of annoys me. But speaking of big words and people annoying me, let's talk about Brighton. Do they annoy you as much as they annoy me? Because I just find them the most jarring group of football fans I've come across in the past 18 months.
No, I don't really get that fussed by Brighton, to be honest. I kind of find the idea that it's a rivalry with them very forced. I guess it adds extra spice to the game. And I understand why, because, like, listen, there's been obviously a lot that's happened between both clubs in terms of mainly Chelsea taking either staff or players from them, so I understand that. Funny enough, I mean, now Caicedo and Cucurella look like both impactful and good Chelsea players, so obviously it's not quite where it was a couple of years ago where it looked like Chelsea had taken their players and Brighton were beating us and finishing above us in the table and things looked bad. So no, I don't see this as the hostile game that Brighton do, but listen, there needs to be a bit of humility from the Chelsea side. Like, Brighton, you've got to factor in where Brighton have come from as a club. And to even be in a position as Brighton where you're trying to get into Europe, you feel like at times you can compete with some of the biggest teams in the league. That for them is obviously a big thing. And I can understand from their point of view when they had Graham Potter, when everything seemed to be going in a good direction, and then a big club comes in and takes the coach that was kind of, it felt like instrumental, but then obviously we saw with De Zerbi that there's a lot more obviously to Brighton behind the scenes and taking some of the players that were big to their team as well. So I understand, listen, football is about rivalries and but their rivalry is with Palace. I don't really understand what the Chelsea thing's about.
I mean, I disagree with you for a start on the De Zerbi stuff. Because De Zerbi last season proved that very much he is a bang average coach and is continuing to do so at Marseille as well. He took what Graham Potter did.
I'm not a big De Zerbi fan either. You know, I think that he plays pretty stupid football, and some of the goals Brighton conceded last year were abysmal. Like, defensively, they were one of the worst teams I watched in the league, actually. Like, in terms of playing at the back when there was no need to, and stupidly passing the ball around your box when you're being pressed. They lost games by three or more goals several times. I counted up because this was at the time when people were kind of saying, oh, De Zerbi should replace Pochettino, and I was like, this is hilarious. Like, you're arguing that our defense currently at Chelsea is not good, so you want to bring in the guy who's conceding three and four goals quite regularly. Like, I just didn't understand.
It's because he was flavor of the month, that's all it was. Like, for me, I mean, Roberto De Zerbi, I didn't think is that great of a coach. I don't know enough about this German fella they brought in. All I know is that he's younger than James Milner, which I find just it's incredible what he's doing, by the way. But obviously he's not going to be on the touchline this weekend, as he did get a red card in the game against Nottingham Forest. But I mean, look, yeah, for me, I just look at Brighton, and they just it's like you said, for me it's a forced rivalry, and when people try and force things it makes me laugh at first, but then it's when they continue to force it, I'm like, mate, like you're trying to just do this thing which is not funny, it's not entertaining, and it's just become a bit annoying. It's like when your sibling pokes you for a bit, like saying, you know, and it's like when you're younger, you'd poke your brother and you'd be at first, but like, all right, stop it, all right, come on. No, seriously, you're taking the pit. Right, seriously, fuck off. That would be that was what it would be. And then that's how I feel about Brighton. I'm like, just get lost. It's like, for me, I always use a story, and I'll never forget it, and it was ridiculous. It's when we played them in the Cup last year, and I always bring it up because it does my head in. It's when I was walking through the Bovril Gate to go to the West Stand, and I had a Brighton fan recognise me and go, "Yeah, Louis, you ready to see a seagull maul a lion?" I was like, "Mate, who the fuck are you? Like, what is wrong with you? This constant need to force a rival. It's like, you're not our rivals. Good for you for what you've done in the club. I think it's really cool. But it's that." And then, for example, Paul Barber, when he was talking about Caicedo, you know, saying, "Oh, he could have gone to a club with history." I was like, "Mate, we've just paid for your stadium. Wind your neck in." I'm like, what is going on? It's that sort of stuff where I sit there and I go, what is wrong with these guys? Like, it's this unnecessary need to just feel... It's this supremacy complex which people from Sussex seem to have, especially on the coast. You know, it's like one of those... You know, it's very sort of like, we're better than you because we live in Brighton and we eat vegan food. Yeah, all right, mate, good for you. I like a steak. And what? What are you going to do about it? It's like, that's what I'm like. Take your Green Party nonsense, all right, and shove it. I don't care what you do with your tins. Like, just play the football. But yeah, anyway, that's that. Should we talk about the football?
I didn't know this was going to become the anti-Brighton podcast. Like, not just Brighton FC, you've gone full-scale culture war into Brighton.
I like Brighton. I like the city. I just don't like...
What do the vegans do to you?
What the vegans do to me? They're trying to force tofu down my throat, mate. I don't want tofu. Yeah. I just want a steak. I want a burger. I want red meat. That's what I'm going to have for my lunch. I'm going to have just a steak. Ugh. Yum, 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 yum.
The only thing I like about tofu is the tofu. It's the tofu survivor on Resident Evil 2. I played this during uni. There's a special kind of challenge mode you can do on Resident Evil 2 where you play as a tofu in Resident Evil 2 and you have to do it against the clock. And you effectively have to stop getting eaten by the zombies and you need to make it to the end point as the tofu. Just search on YouTube, the tofu survivor. It was incredible. Some of those nights in our uni house, just playing the tofu survivor against the clock were incredible. So that really is the extent to my tofu.
Is that
knowledge.
What you're going to, are we going to have to play that then for like when you come over for the housewarming at my new place? You're just going to play tofu survivor and Resident Evil 2.
The tofu survivor is a goated game mode, even though I'm not the biggest Resident Evil fan. It is I need to send you the link because it is by far here we go. Yeah, because it's got the beret hat on it as well. I've searched it. This is incredible. This is bringing back all 2019 memories.
So it's got all of that sort of stuff. Oh, I'm gonna have to look at this. Oh, I've got it here, hang on, let's have a look. What is this?
I've sent him the video link as we're
what
recording.
Is going on.
Just to get his
I've got Artlist.io coming up. That is not a branded placement, but if you guys want to give us money, it'd be great. Let's check. The Tofu Survivor. Right. Let's see. What is this? Dan, what is this? You're literally punching zombies as a tofu. What is going on?
Now this is epic.
I'm so confused right. Okay, right. I'll watch that more a bit later. That is that. Yeah, okay. So that's fun. Should we talk about the football? Oh dear. Well, anyway, the Tofu Survivor, Resident Evil 2. If anyone wants to watch it, that's that'll be placed as a link in the Twitter thread for anyone who's interested.
I dare you to title this podcast the Tofu Survivor.
No, I won't, because I'm the one that's going to get in trouble if we do that. Because then Gary's going to go, "What are you two doing?" And we're like, "We're talking about tofu for 45 minutes." But yeah, anyway, I don't eat tofu. I never will eat tofu. It looks rubbery. All I've heard is it tastes disgusting, but apparently it's like you put ginger in it, it's lovely, blah, blah, blah. I don't care. Like, give me chicken, give me pork, give me steak, give me anything before I eat tofu.
Okay, Piers Morgan, calm down. Let's get to the lineup.
Well, we're not doing the lineup yet. We've still got to talk about the rest of the game. Because, I mean, we haven't even...
Louis Benavente, uncensored.
Mate, I do that anyway. You already know that. I live my life out there. You know, everyone can hear what I have to say.
Do you condemn the tofu?
I do condemn tofu. Not having it. Forget it. But they're saying that I'm probably going to end up having to eat it at some point anyway, because of the notorious PIE, which will be making a comeback. Obviously, hasn't been to the past away again because we've been moving. But anyway, that's by the by. So, in terms of what we're coming up against with Brighton, right? Do you feel confident going into this fixture that Chelsea are going to get the job done, or do you still feel slightly contentious where it's a tough game? You feel like Chelsea, this is probably the first real test Chelsea have had in a little while, potentially.
Yeah, I do think it is a fair point that if you look at the opposition we've come up against, West Ham, you know, haven't had a good start to the year. Wolves haven't had a good start to the year. Bournemouth, I think, are a better team, and they did give Chelsea a tougher game. So I think in terms of what I expect the level of game, the level of difficulty for Chelsea, it is going to be a lot higher. Obviously, Brighton undefeated, I think one of four teams that are undefeated still this season. And I think that they obviously come into this game with a lot of confidence. And I think that for Chelsea's point of view, I actually do think it kind of flips, doesn't it? Because you don't consider Brighton to be a team that are going to come to Stamford Bridge and just sit back for 90 minutes. That's not in their style. I have been interested in looking at some of their numbers that actually, in terms of possession and passing and kind of forward passing, long passing, has actually gone up this year. I don't want to steal the limelight of Stat Shaggers, but I was quite intrigued that maybe it is a little bit more direct than what we saw from Brighton, but they are still a progressive minded team. They aren't, you know, they're not a defense minded team first. And look at the results they had away at the Emirates. I know obviously that was heavily influenced by the Declan Rice red card, but they very much took a hold of that second half, and I thought it was quite impressive the way they probably could have actually won that game, to be honest, at the Emirates. So they've had some good results, but we saw last week that Nottingham Forest, another unbeaten team, have been able to get behind their defence, have been able to score two goals. So Chelsea, in front of goal, I've said this consistently, it's lovely to say that I don't think goal scoring is our problem, it feels like. It feels like we're a good attacking team. Jadon Sancho is performing really well. Jackson, obviously, has had a really good start to the year. Palmer is picking up where he left off last year. So it's a big test, because I guess, you know, if you're cynical, you could sort of look at, well, West Ham are terrible, and we could sort of go through all the caveats of the teams that we've played so far that aren't that good. Of course, when you're coming up against an unbeaten team, it's kind of, can Chelsea's positive momentum override the structure and stability that has been there at Brighton? And I think that's going to be an interesting thing to watch, especially if Chelsea score first early and they continue that momentum, to see how Brighton react to that situation.
Yeah, I think that's what is going to be, for me, the biggest test, is that hurdle of, they are undefeated, can Chelsea do the business? And honestly, I really think we can. I really do think we can, because the more I look at how Chelsea have played over the past two or three games, I do feel that there is a real opportunity to take that positive, especially with, as you've mentioned, you know, Brighton are far more direct. If you look at how they play, they don't actually have that many bodies in midfield. They like to push everyone forward. They almost have like five in attack, two in midfield, and then sort of you have the three centre halves. So there's always a double pivot. But that double pivot can be targeted well if Chelsea overload midfield. Now, obviously, I reckon they're going to have looked into that and think, you know, how are we going to probably stop Chelsea doing that, especially in the last two games, because that's where we've had the most joy. I don't think going down the wings has been Chelsea's strength. I think going down the middle, Chelsea have had the most opportunity to capitalise on situations. And I think, you know, if you have Cole Palmer in the 10 or Nkunku, whoever it will be, you know, I do think that we will have a lot of joy there. And Nicholas Jackson, I think, will definitely be somebody who, you know, purple patch or not, I think will definitely cause some problems for Brighton. And I've got a lot of confidence going into this fixture. And you never thought you'd hear me say that, eh? You always thought I'm naturally and pessimistic. But you know what? I've got a lot of confidence that I think Chelsea get the job done.
I just wanted to bring up, I think we have to give credit to Maresca because he's been a lot more adaptable than I anticipated. Chelsea look so much better than he did in pre-season, and I think part of it is granted a bit more time with the coach, but I also think maybe something that Maresca said, he was asked about Nkunku and Jackson and, like, you know, can you play both, where does Nkunku fit, Jackson Swarm is obviously so good, you're not going to drop him, and he was like, it's a nice problem to have. And then he kind of referenced a little bit of the defensive concern of having too many attacking players on the pitch, and maybe that's something he realized during pre-season, that the lopsided nature of the team can be a real problem, and you need to have that balance, that you need to have that cohesion, which is why earlier I spoke about Cucurella in central midfield. It was something that we saw at the end of last season with Pochettino. I just haven't quite liked, because I just don't think Gusto, who we suspect is ready for this game, he doesn't look as comfortable in central midfield to me. And I just think Cucurella just seems to flow a lot better when he's moving into that central role. He's moving into advanced Caicedo, kind of playing that anchor role where he's able to drop deeper. But also, Caicedo has been incredible in recent weeks. I think that's also something to point out. I mean, his numbers say as much, but he's been so dominant. Everything we would have hoped and dreamed when we signed him. And again, let's hope he continues that against a higher calibre of opposition, right? It's all right doing it when West Ham are terrible off the ball. You need to, of course, do it consistently, but Caicedo too. So I just think the team, Caicedo and Enzo, obviously, it was a better game for them in midfield. I think we still need to see how those two, or just Enzo Fernandez particularly, looks again against the higher calibre of opposition. I need to see that on a consistent basis. I'm not saying he had a bad game last week. Obviously, he didn't. No one really did against West Ham. It's just when a team is going to offer Chelsea more problems in central midfield is what I'd like to see. And I don't think that's an unfair question to ask. But all round, Chelsea have players in form. They have people who know where the back of the net is at the moment, have confidence. The confidence is going to be flowing through the veins of Nicholas Jackson, rightly so. And I also think because of Maresca's pragmatism, getting back to that, or adaptability, whatever you want to call it, is Chelsea still look like a great transition team. They're a lot more direct. I think they're a lot more willing to lure people in and then hit them quite quickly, compared to kind of the slow build-up that I think a lot of us anticipated. Of course, Brighton became the bait the press masters, in the sense that, and it became so obvious under De Zerbi that teams just were like, well, we're just not going to play like that and see what you do. So to see how Fabian Hörsler deals with that at Chelsea is, because it's even a player like Levi, right? It's the question I think every team that comes up against Chelsea are going to be asking themselves is, do we press Levi Colwell, maybe hoping that we fall some errors and win the ball high up in their pitch, but then also if we press him and he's got the quality on the ball to pass round us, and then that ball gets into central midfield where you have Caicedo, Palmer, Enzo and Cucurella combining, and then you've got Jackson running through the centre. It's that tactical kind of question that I think Chelsea are posing to teams at the moment, that's quite interesting to see how different opponents are going to approach.
No,
it.
I agree. So I think that is the big question. I think Brighton's a good test, and I think it's obviously Manchester City we kind of ruled out very early on, and I'm not saying Brighton are in the same quality as the teams that are above them at all. I think they're the teams just below. But I think for us, in terms of what Chelsea need to understand where they are in their process right now, is if they can beat a team company like Brighton, I think it'll be a case of showing that, I'm not saying Chelsea are back by any stretch of the imagination, but it'll show that Chelsea are further along that process than I think any of us have anticipated. And it'll be exciting to see how they take on this challenge, because I think that Brighton are a good test. They're a good side, but I think we got the quality to beat them.
Also, we yet to win the Premier League at home under Enzo Maresca. That's something I only realised the other day when they were talking about Barrow, because we hadn't. We beat Servette, we beat Barrow, but obviously we lost to Man City, drew to Crystal Palace. So hopefully.
Well, if he can. Yeah, well, if we can, you know, get rid of Brighton's undefeated record, Enzo Maresca gets his first win at Stamford Bridge, I think that it's a real opportunity for Chelsea to really step up and do the business. So let's see what happens. But with all that being said, Dan, we should probably get into our 11. So you've already mentioned about the imbalance at the top end of the pitch. So I tell you what, we're going to do a little flip, because we always start at the back. Let's be different, all right? Let's start at the front. So, hang on, does that mean, how are we going to do this? Right, okay. We're playing, obviously, a 4-2-3-1. So we'll do the striker and the two wingers. Go.
Jackson, Madueke, Sancho.
Okay, interesting. Why I'm saying interesting, that's pretty self-explanatory, isn't it? Because I think my argument was going to be that if we're going to talk about Christopher Nkunku, is this maybe a game where we could put Cole Palmer out on the right-hand side, maybe, and play Nkunku behind Jackson? Or do you think it's good to bring him on later on in the game?
Yeah, it's just kind of that gut feeling that Maresca maybe will look at, why do I change a team that seems to be doing quite well? And that maybe is his instinct. But listen, if I see Palmer, Jackson and Nkunku all starting in the same team, obviously there is a bit more excitement personally for me. The question then becomes, what does that look like on the pitch? I have more confidence that Palmer can start from a wider area and be impactful than Nkunku can. That's always my big thing. I think Nkunku has to operate either as a forward or just behind the centre forward. He can't be out wide. So that's the only way I think you could do it, where it would work. But obviously Palmer has found himself in central positions for Chelsea, and that's a great area for him to be impactful. So it's a difficult one.
Yeah,
isn't
no,
it?
I think that's the issue. I think also with that, it factors into the form that Madueke is in as well. You know, that sort of player, do you drop him and sort of allow for the other players coming? But like Enzo Maresca said, it's a great problem to have. But I'm happy with the team you've put out. I was only playing devil's advocate because I like it to be difficult. So we'll go our front four then. I guess in Cole Palmer's number 10. That's pretty self-explanatory. The double pivot, the term midfield. Now, obviously, Moises Caicedo is going to be in that. Romeo Lavia is probably going to be available. So that's a case of, do you risk him and bring him straight into the side? Or do you do something different?
I still think he'll just start Enzo Fernandez again. I can't see Fernandez not starting this game. Unless he's ill again or picks up a knock. I think that Enzo Fernandez and Caicedo will be the midfield two, joined by one of the right back or the left back who moves into central midfield. I think with Lavia, obviously, they're going to be very cautious with him. And then you factor in now with the introduction of the Conference League, that is naturally going to be a place where you'd suspect that Lavia... is Lavia in the squad? Maybe was Lavia one of the ones that's actually left out the squad? I can't remember now.
He's been left out of the Conference League squad, yeah.
Yeah, so obviously you can't use him there. I don't think he'll start, though. I'd be quite surprised, given how little football he's played since that opening day, if he'll come back.
Okay, so we've got Enzo Fernandez, Cole Palmer, Moises Caicedo's midfield three, Cucurella's left back, as we've already discussed. Right back is probably going to be Melo Gusto. And the two centre-halves and the goalkeeper pick themselves. So we've done that. So Fofana, yeah. Cole Will and Robert Sanchez. So if we just go through it in the right way, shall I do it like a commentator voice? I reckon I could prove the point. Shall I bring out Simon, or shall it just be me, or what are you thinking?
Simon, we have to wait for a special moment for Simon to come back out. Yeah, I think we need to find another voice for the time being.
It's the fact that, have you still got those videos on your channel? Are they unlisted now, or did you delete them?
I think I've still got them. I need to look.
I feel like
I've definitely still got them on a hard drive somewhere.
It was that my favourite one was when we were doing the commentary and the video just jumped and I had to do it all over again. To get going. But anyway, yeah, for those, again, new to the pod, maybe haven't listened before, Simon McGovern is from Dan's FIFA 16 career mode, where I did all the commentary, and it was all about Cheeky Rubes in midfield with Baba Rahman at left back. That was my one thing that was needed. We had to agree on that. But anyway, we'll go through the team. So, for Chelsea against Brighton, the Chelsea Echo 11 goes like this. Spanish international Robert Sanchez starts in goal against his former club, looking to continue his great form in net after holding down the number one goalkeeper position for Chelsea Football Club against Philip Jorgensen. The back four consists of European Cup winner Mark Cucurella coming in again against his former club to really spark the difference, continue the great form that he's been in for Chelsea Football Club. Levi Colwill, Chelsea Academy graduate, but apparently ex-Brighton, amazing player because he apparently was owned by them for a year, comes in for Chelsea at the left centre-back spot with Wesley Fofana hoping that his knees stay intact on the right-hand side of the central defensive partnership. At right-back, we see Malo Gusto continue while Reece James is absent and will continue to be so with the numbers that we're seeing in terms of his injury days and minutes stacking up against him. The two in midfield we see are Moises Caicedo, once again against his former club, and Enzo Fernandez holding down the fort in that double pivot. The number 10 sees Mr. What? Himself start, and that is Cole Palmer in the number 10 position for Chelsea, which, by the way, I do want to say before I carry on this, Dan, how great is it to see the renaissance of number 10s? I'm loving it. It's great to see them back. I miss James Rodriguez, that 2014 World Cup. What a time to be alive. But aside from that, we will continue. The two wingers are occupied by Jadon Sancho and Noni Madueke, both looking to find form and continue the great form that they've been on against the side, which loves to push high up the pitch. And your number nine for Chelsea against Brighton will be Nicholas Jackson, starting for Chelsea, the Senegalese international. But that has been the Chelsea Echo. That has been your predicted 11 and your preview. But what we're going to do now is jump into some of the quotes from the big bald man himself, Enzo Maresca.
Hello again. Injury update, I guess, Romeo Lavia.
No, Romeo is available for tomorrow. The only one is Rhys.
So he's back and available?
Yes.
Yeah. Available, do you think, to play the whole game or start? Or?
We'll see. We have one more session now and then we decide. But the important thing is that finally he's back.
And Rhys, still no real update?
Yeah, exactly.
Ben Chilwell.
Yeah.
I mean, you said you didn't say anything but good about him after the game. He's, he played half the match. You said that you try and give him some more minutes, some more matches. Does that include in the Premier League as well?
Yeah, in the moment that we need, for sure. Why not? I said already many times, and I will say again, that in the moment that Chile is with us, he's one of the Chelsea players. And this one of our player, and if we need, we give him chance and minutes.
When you're advising him in the transfer window to leave, do you now think that was a mistake? Were you making a mistake? Could he be important to you?
We all make mistake. Probably yes, probably no. I don't know. Simply, I said many times, I'm here to take decision, and sometimes they are good decisions, sometimes are not good. But the only thing I can say that there is not any bad intention from me. It's just to see things and to try to think about the good thing and the best thing for the club.
Mark Cucurella, he started in all of the Premier League games so far this season. I just wanted to ask you your thoughts on how important he is to your team and the way that the team defends.
Mark is very important. Mark, he has something that sometimes you struggle to find a player. Mark is good, and he is making good also the players around him, because he's a guy that is always talking, he's always demanding, and when you are able in a team to have five, six, seven players like Mark, that they are always talking and improving the rest, the other players, it's something important. So I'm very happy with the mark.
Hi, Enzo. I don't know if you've seen the stats, but Moises Caicedo has made more tackles than any other midfielder in the Premier League. Before you came, people were like, oh, he's not a 100 million player. There were doubts if he was that good. So you training him, how good is he and how much more can he get?
No, he is he's top player. He's very good. But as all the top player, he can improve things, and for sure he can improve. The way he's playing in this moment is fantastic. Then about the price, it's not my problem. It's the market that sometimes decide the price. But most of the time, because clubs pay a lot of money for players, we expected that that kind of player will be always the best or these kind of things. But it's not like this. Moy, he has to enjoy, he has to play, he has to work hard, but the most important thing, he has to always to be happy and enjoy football and don't think about price and these kind of things, because it's not his problem. If a club pay for a player, it's because the club decide to pay that amount of money. It's not because the player ask, if you want me, you have to pay this money. It's an agreement between clubs, so for all the clubs it's the same, but the player in this case, just enjoy, just play football, that is what Moy does very good, and this is the most important thing.
Numbers were said, quotes were said, opinions were given, and the renaissance of number 10s was briefly discussed. But ladies and gentlemen, that has been the Chelsea Echo. That has been myself, that has been Dan this week. Make sure you tune in to Final Score after the game with the Score, Rambles and Big Red, and you can discuss all of your thoughts on the Brighton fixture as well as listen to what they have to say about it as well. A fantastic show after bar as well, if I say so myself. I thought the lads have done a fantastic job and it's getting better and better every week. All it needs now is for you guys to pop in and listen on Twitter Spaces and make sure you request to get your opinions heard. I'll be there, as I will be at the game, giving you your view from the ground. Dan might even tune in if he's good, you know. He'll think about it. Maybe. He probably won't. But it is what it is. Dan's a busy guy on game days. And obviously, guys, as well as that, make sure you tune into the voice note review from myself, Dan and Tom, giving you our initial thoughts straight after the fixture. If you have enjoyed the pod, please make sure you give us a 5-star review. It really does help the pod, and make sure you tell people about it, because me and Dan are working hard to make things even better. Obviously right now it is audio only, but now that I have a place where the internet works, I might be able to think about doing something a little bit different, as me and Dan have already discussed. But shh, that's between us, all right? Don't tell anybody about that yet. I just realized this went slightly ASMR, so I'm gonna run with it. Dan, thanks for coming on again this week, mate. All right, guys, that really sounded horrible when Dan did that. I don't like it, and I'm sure you're hating it as well. All right, guys, see you later. Ta-da.